Yo, what's up? It's Junior Sanchez, and you're listening to Rebel Radio. Fuck you, Josh.
What's up? This is Rebel Radio.
What up? What up? This is DJ Newmark.
This is Peanut Butter Wolf.
It's your boy. It's okay.
You checking out Rebel Radio?
Rebel Radio.
This is Rebel Radio.
We in the place right here. Rebel Radio is going down.
What did you say, Rebel Radio?
Oh, wait. Let's do it again.
Rebel Radio.
What's up, Rebels? Welcome back to Rebel Radio, the weekly show where I bring you the rebels who are shaping our culture. We talk about how they do it, why they do it, and what you can do to get a little piece of the pie for yourself. We're also the only show to bring you new music every week from our friends over at EDM.com. I'm your host, Josh Levine. Happy New Year. This is our first episode of 2020. I'm very excited to bring you an interview I caught live in Amsterdam with Junior Sanchez. We were out at the Amsterdam dance event, ADE. For anybody that's involved in any way in dance music or even a fan of dance music, you should definitely be in Amsterdam every whenever that is. I think it's October. It's a great time, and I had the rare opportunity to catch up with Junior. He's a DJ that I've been following for a long time. I love his music and his whole get down, and we had a great conversation about his career, about how he's really always challenged the status quo. He's been a rebel amongst rebels, showing his contemporaries how you can go outside of boundaries of genres, of just really challenge what everybody's used to. So it's a great interview. I'm excited to share it with you here, and let's get into it right after our EDM.com track of the week. That was the EDM.com track of the week. That was Addo Woods with Fuck. Well, he spells it F-C-K, but I think you know what it's all about. Anyway, if you like that one, get over to EDM.com, check out more new music, and let's get into my interview right now with Junior Sanchez. Dude, I appreciate you making time. I'm a big fan of your music for years.
Appreciate that.
And, I really appreciate your perspective on art and, kind of why you do what you do and all that. So I'm excited to dig in a little bit.
What?
Take me back to the beginning. Do you remember the first record you ever bought?
I do, actually. There's a lot of records that came to my life as a young kid. I'm the youngest of six siblings, so. But the one that I personally bought was a bootleg of Acid Crash, and the other side was a freestyle record called it was Trilogy. The group was called Trilogy, and it was called Something Hot. I remember. I didn't get it for that. I got it for Acid Crash, Tyreek.
Okay.
Tyreek Cooper. And that was the first house record that I bought, and that kind of like. That was 1987 or something.
So you were into house from the very beginning.
Yeah. So, I mean, I grew up.
The beginning of you.
Yeah. Well, I grew up youngest of six, right. And they all had their own style. So one of my brothers was into like industrial, like KMFDM, Fulton Cox, and Ministry, and then my sister was into like Boston and ELO and Jeff Flynn, and my other brother was into hip hop, like Slick Rick. So everyone had their thing.
Yeah.
So I got influenced by all of them, so I loved all that stuff. But when I first heard Acid Crash or house music, that was me. That's so that was my sound print or my blueprint. I was like, all right, this is me. You guys got all this. This is what I got. Because my other brother, who passed away, he was into Depeche Mode and New Wave and Pet Shop Boys and like early freestyle.
Sure.
So that was his thing. And he liked house music as well. But, you know, he was leaning more towards all the new wavy stuff and the freestyle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And when house really, you know, that was like, this is mine. I discovered it.
Right.
It wasn't you guys introducing me, you know?
And yeah, so, yeah, sure.
That was since then.
Yeah. That's interesting because, you know, music, I think especially at that time, is such a big part of your identity. You know, the way you dress, the way you talk, that like your whatever. And so you're in this household with everybody with their own different styles. And it must have been an interesting dinner table.
Yeah, I mean, and they all bought vinyl because it was the format to buy.
Sure.
And it wasn't even because they were DJs. It was just that was the format. Even you bought cassettes, or vinyl. They all bought vinyl because it was cool and normal, and they all had record players.
Yeah.
So when they left home, when they wound up leaving, they just didn't take the records.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they all just they left them. So I just winded up pretty early on with a massive eclectic collection of
That's
music.
That's amazing.
You know, so you know, I would have stacks of the Smiths and stacks of this and that and. And I just continued to add to it as I got older.
Yeah.
And then I learned how to DJ mixing those records. So
sure.
I would mix, you know, whether it be my mother's Latin records, Brazilian records with New Wave records or, you know, KMFDM, Depeche Mode, this and that would be mixing them. So I learned to mix early on with that style. And then that perfected the way I mixed and pitching and hearing.
Mm-hmm.
It actually helped me with my tuning of my ears because I would know beforehand what record would go with the record
because
you wouldn't wait to the end
because
you're kind of blending music so if you know you would
sure.
just kind of figure out the key in your head. It was weird, like you kind of knew that I did, and that helped me a lot early on.
Who introduced you to DJing?
So when I was in middle school, I had a friend. And he was the first friend that I knew that had a setup. Like, it was like Gemini setup, belt drive, like the knob, you know, the wheel.
Yeah,
pitch,
yeah. I remember
pitch
those.
Your thumb, yeah. He had that setup, and I started DJing then, right? And then in 1988, my brother comes over to introduce his wife now. They've been together forever. At the time, his girlfriend to my mom. And her, it's going to sound complicated, but it's not. But her brother-in-law's brother. That's the simplest way I can put it. I used to say her sister's husband's brother. Her brother-in-law's brother.
Yeah, I get it.
Was a producer. And his name at the time, he had a record out called Fly Tetas. It was like a huge Latin freestyle record talking about titties.
Mm-hmm.
He had like the voice of like Tony Montana. Like,
it
was a big New York club record.
Yeah.
And he went by the moniker Jose Chinga. It was on Basement Records. Mm-hmm. And then he produced a lot of freestyle, and then he went on and did some house stuff. He did Joey Kidd, everything, all these like cool freestyle New York records. And I knew the record. I was like, because it was a big ass record talking about titties.
Right.
So everybody was like, I was like, oh my God, that shit, that I want to meet him.
Of course.
I'm like, 11, I think, And I asked my mom so my brother lived with her brother-in-law at the time before they got married in his basement. And they lived in Newark. So I was like, can I go spend time with my brother and meet this guy? My mom said, yeah, if you go to church every Sunday so you can, you know, do your thing. Communion, I don't know, confirmation, I don't know what it was, something like that. And I said, yeah. So I would go spend the weekends with him, and lo and behold, Tony studio, the guy that did that record, was in the basement. That's the first time I saw a studio. And I hung out with him. He didn't treat me like a kid. He kind of like, you know, I would hang out with him to, and it was the weekend, so 2, 3, 4 in the morning, he's making music, and I'm just looking at him do stuff. And he gave me my first crate of records. Like he went through his doubles and all this stuff, and just little by little, it was like a whole summer I was there. And he compiled the crate and he said, here you go.
Right.
And that was my first real crate of records, and that's when I got the bug. And he plays a part in my first production years later as well, funny enough.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, you seem to have a lot of people that you connected with really early on, from Armand, Harry Romero, that, you know, I'm sure helped you in certain ways, you helped them. Is there a secret to connecting with people?
I was just out all the time. Yeah. I remember when I met Armand, I met him in Boston at a rave. So I was going, I went to a rave in Boston, like one of those colors rave, like blue, red, green, you know. I think it was Tom Mello. Rave.
Okay.
And I went to a rave and he was playing. He was going by the name DJ Aviate because that was his label, Aviate Records.
Right, right, right.
So he wasn't even on Marvin Helden. But he had like certain records out on Aviate, Pirates Caribbean, like stuff like that. So I knew him, his music at least, and he was DJing, and I was at the time hustling. I was selling shirts. I would take like the Burger King logo and put, and it would say Disco King, and just sell it in the raves. And I gave, he was like, yo, I like that shirt. I gave him a shirt, and he was like, yo, I'm moving to New York at this time, blah, blah, blah. Let's exchange numbers. And he's older than me. He's like, he's about 8 or 9 years older. And he was like, here's my number. And at that time, it was like literally a physical number. He called me on a piece of paper.
Whatever, yeah.
He's like, I'll call you when, he said, you know, give me a number, I'll call you when I move to New York.
Right.
So he did. He actually called me. I remember being at my brother's house and I get a call because I think I gave him my, that number because I was there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or was it? Yeah. No, I checked the voicemail at my house, and he left a message on the voicemail, and I called him back. And he was like, yo, I'm having a party. You see, he moved to New York already. He was there for a few months, so it was the first time he called me.
He called
me as soon as he came. He just got settled in. He found a place. And, he said, I'm having a party. I want to invite you. I'm here. I'm in New York now. And the party he had, he lived in his loft on near the music building on 30th Street, and he had two roommates. One now works as a radio dude named John the Horse McMahon's, like a radio guy, I think for Interscope or something.
Oh, okay.
John, and some other dude was like a photographer. So they all shared a room, and his room was in an old fur vault. So the door was like this crazy ass heavy door.
Let me tell you about our sponsor, HoneyBook. I know a lot of you started your own businesses or you're thinking about it. You got your side hustle, you're an entrepreneur. You're the CEO, but if it's your company and you're just starting out, you're also going to be the accountant, the marketing manager, the assistant. You got to do it all. And if you don't, it doesn't get done. And I know that's not why you started your business. I can say that for myself. I started to bring ideas into the world, and yet we get stuck with all this minutia. So to help you, you need HoneyBook. It's an online business management tool that organizes all your client communications, bookings, contracts, invoices, all in one place. You can sync it up with your Google Suite, your MailChimp, your QuickBooks, or whatever other tools you use. And it helps you automate all that busy work. There's templates, it's just a great system for getting more done with less time, lets you focus on the stuff that you really want to be doing and control your business. Right now, HoneyBook is offering our listeners 50% off when you visit honeybook.com/rebel. Payment's flexible, and the promotion applies whether you pay monthly or annually. So go to honeybook.com/rebel for 50% off your first year. That's honeybook.com/rebel.
Anyway, so I go to this party, and his loft was probably as big as his room, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit more. And it was wall-to-wall people in there, you know, between all of them inviting who they knew, right? So it was an eclectic group of people. But Gladys was there, Pizarro from Strictly Rhythm, Roger Sanchez was there. All these people were there, you know. And I walked into Armand's room, and I see Roger and Armand's, at that time, his baby's mom, sitting on the bed, and she's crying. Like, yo, what's up? What's going on? Like, why is she crying? He goes, oh, she just found out Roger did love dancing. And I was just like, oh, shit. And that was emotional because I'm like, damn, man. Like, look how people affect people. You know, like, records affect people, you know?
For sure.
So she's meeting Roger for the first time. That record connected her so much. She started dancing. Plus, they're probably all in ecstasy. So it was like that. And I wasn't. So I was walking in completely so into a room full of emotion, you know? So Armand had, you know, grabbed me from the neck and was like, scratched my, like, give me a noogie in the head. And Gladys was coming in and he was like, this is the next kid right here. And she looks at me, she was like, all right, come to my office, bring me some music, and bring me on a DAT. I don't want no cassettes. And I turned on him later, I'm like, yo, what's a DAT? You know? So I go and I'm like, I take that, to me, I was just like focused. And I go to my friend who was the musical director of, or he ran the music for his college, for Montclair State University. He was like, yeah, we got tons of those and nobody uses them, DAT machines. It's like in the back, he's like, they're literally two racks full of Panasonic 3700s.
Yep.
Just, and I just go there with a screwdriver. I'm like, let's go. Take one. He was like, just, I don't know.
Right.
Go. I took one was like, one thing was true. I should have just took another one. It was so many. But I'm fixated on this one. I'm bending the ear of it.
That was the one, man.
That was the one. And I took that one and I made my first records. And I remember bringing it to Gladys and she signed him.
Yeah.
And my thought mentality back then, it wasn't even about, I'm going to be a superstar DJ. I was going to fly around the world. I was going to do, no, I was like, she gave me a check. I'm like, yo, $1,200. I think it was like $1,200, $1,500. I'm like, yo, I can open a bank account. I can kind of find my own place. If I do one of these a month, I could live.
Yeah.
I could, like, you know, at the time, as a kid,
sure.
I mean, I'm young.
Sure.
That's it. That was my only thought of success.
Yeah.
It wasn't, there was no like preconceived notion of like, I'm gonna be this thing.
Yeah.
We weren't doing it for those reasons. We were just doing it because we loved it and we just wanted to survive.
So what is it now? How do you define success now?
Happiness. Straight up being happy.
Okay.
That's real, for me at this point and where I am in my life is happiness.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not about repeating myself to achieve what I achieved already. So, you know, I look at what I've done, fantastic, I'm cool with the accolades, but I'm not into just repeating myself, kind of growth.
Yeah.
Quality, I like to make sure that I make music that is, you know, from my soul, from the heart.
For sure.
And that's all I can do, you know? And if people resonate, resonates with people, awesome. That's all you can ask for.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I saw a quote you said that art is about being a rebel.
Yeah.
Which is part of, you know, why you're a great fit for this show.
Yeah.
Because it's called Rebel Radio, and we talk to people that are rebels. And so I wonder, do you ever catch yourself kind of getting stuck in your comfort zone? And what do you do to push yourself out of that?
Man, you know, it's funny because I've always been my worst enemy with that. Like, my Keely Seo is getting bored too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And that caused a big problem for my career, I think, early on. Because I was just, like, constantly trying to find something else.
Yeah.
And then, so if everyone was putting down guitars and picking up turntables, I was like, all right, I'm going to pick up that guitar. And so, but people, so they were just catching up and I'm moving on. Not to say I'm like this prolific ahead thinker. It was just my problem that I was constantly like on something. And then by the time I was tired of it, people were catching up to that. And I'm like, okay, I'm on to this next thing. And I should just stay there.
But I think that's the challenge of artists, right? Is that, you're so close to the music that you want to evolve faster than your audience can keep up, right?
Yeah.
Like, you might be bored with it.
I think
but you've heard the song 5,000 times. They've only heard it 10 times.
You know, but it's a maturity thing, too, I think.
Sure.
When you're young, you're a rebel. You're more rebellious, and you just want to do things. And you're not necessarily thinking about the aesthetic of it and how good it is. You just want to do it.
Right.
Without thinking, because punk rock to me is a mentality. It's not a form of music.
Right.
Like, and people misconstrue that all the time.
Sure.
You can be a flute player and beat the shit out of somebody. That's pretty punk. You know, it's an attitude.
That's right.
What you put into something. So,
you
know, early on when we listened to Kerry Chandler and his kick drums on those deep records, that was punk for house people.
Mm-hmm.
Because me and Armand was like, yo, his kicks are so tough and they're different than the traditional deep house producers at the time. We'll be right back. rebel to us. Mm-hmm. And then that's what inspired us to go, damn, we should make house records. But you know what all the New York producers are doing? Let's not do what they're doing. Let's mm-hmm. sample German techno mm-hmm. and make New York house records and sign it to Strictly Rhythm.
Wow.
Like, that was our thought process. Like, let's take from the shit that nobody's doing here
and
slow it down. Because mm-hmm. that's what we would do. We would take techno records and just, you know, pitch it way down and play mm-hmm. it with Louis records, mm-hmm. Mass Network records. And that's why he was already criticized at first. In the beginning, people didn't really like Armand stuff because it was different.
Sure.
You know? So it's, they were like, well, you don't understand. You try to destroy or you try to, you know, diss.
Right.
They were like, what is this? Is this techno or whatever? So,
yeah, I mean, there's a lot of evidence that people, as much as we think we want something new, we really like what's familiar.
Yeah, totally, man. You know, you want the chords and you want, you know, to,
right.
We just
gotta
wanted,
lead people sort of
we
slowly.
Wanted that, but we wanted it to have a different, like, aesthetic to it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
We, if, like, we wore a suit, we're going to wear a suit, but we're going to dress it up with a different shoe mm-hmm. or a different mm-hmm. cut.
Yeah.
Or maybe the jacket's going to look way bugged out. But you're still rocking a suit.
That's right.
You know?
So how do you bring that rebellion now? Now that you're wiser and gone through that youthful phase.
With keeping things quality, not quantity, strategic, and making things that are really good, that you can really tell, like, you know, damn, even if it's a track, you can listen to it and go, that's thought, there was thought put behind it. It's not like, you know, I'm putting together, you know, sample packs and this and that, and just, you know, you can tell when somebody puts their soul, heart into something.
Mm-hmm.
I was telling somebody yesterday, everything has soul in it. Techno is, it's black. It's from Detroit. You listen to good techno, you will hear soulfulness in there.
Mm-hmm.
Carl Craig does a record, or they, you hear soul from it. You don't hear soul music when somebody does it, it's not from the heart.
Right.
They're just putting it together because they're just slapping it on because they just want to get it done, and they don't really know what they're doing. They're just doing it.
Sure.
So, I think being rebellious now more than ever in this day and age, where there's so much music that is just watered down, mm-hmm. whitewashed, and just stale, is actually putting heart into your work. That's right now is rebellious you can get because nobody's doing it.
Mm-hmm.
They're just doing it without heart because they're looking at this success of being the next this or the next that or the, you know, the vanity, the fame, the whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
they're doing it for different reasons. So
yeah.
I think, like, being rebellious now, right now, is putting heart back into the music, you know, which has never gone for me, but mm-hmm. now it's, like, more apparent. I'm making it more evident.
Yeah.
So I always try to make music with a purpose. Even if it's the smallest thing, to me, it means something. If somebody could decipher it, great. I don't want to tell people why I'm doing it because I think music should be left to interpretation, you know?
Yeah.
But there's always a purpose why I'm doing it.
I like that.
You know?
We're here in Amsterdam. This city always inspires me. Just there's something about the water, the canals, and the architecture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love just the young energy. There's so many people here that they just come here like this is their first time leaving home.
Yeah.
They're in Amsterdam and they're going wild. And, like, I just, you know, to me, I feed off of that. What's inspiring you right now outside of music?
Food.
Yeah.
Chefs.
Mm.
That's inspiring to me. I've been like, for the past few years, I mean, for a while, what's funny, I've been around that world a lot since I started my career, but I was so young and naive to what I was exposed to. I had no idea.
Yeah, we don't appreciate food.
We don't appreciate it when you're young.
No.
But I'm learning that they're just like us. And some chefs are crazy.
They're artists.
Yeah. And they're nuts.
Yeah.
And it made me realize that I'm actually not that crazy. You know?
Give me an example.
Meaning, when you look at some of our favorite artists, like, right, whether it be painters or singers, poets, musicians, whatever, some are out of their fucking minds.
Yeah.
Like, for real. And I'm like, damn, I'm not really out of my mind, so am I that good?
Well, you didn't cut your ear off.
Yeah, like, you think about it, you're like, damn. But food is inspiring to me because, you know, having the same sensory because you're putting something in your mouth that you mm-hmm. think looks like something, you pop it in, it tastes like something else. Music, you know, you can interpret that to music too. It's ingredients, how you structure, how you deconstruct something. Now I'm like, okay, I want to make a soulful record, but yeah. I don't want it to be just like a traditional soulful record. What am I going to do to make it different? Which is difficult mm-hmm. to make it different, that it kind of, it's a little bit more modern, but without intentionally being so right that I'm going over people's heads, because that's what I did a long time, is go over people's heads.
Sure.
So it's finding that balance.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's inspiring me.
It's hard to do. I mean, you can, if you're behind the tables, you can see it when you go over people's heads, right? Because mm-hmm. they stop dancing.
Yeah.
But in the studio, that's much harder.
Yeah.
To grasp, right?
I remember playing Pasha. This is in Ibiza, like pre-DFA. Like, you know, James Murphy early mm-hmm. on as a friend. And I remember mm-hmm. championing a lot of his records because to me it was like the reemergence of, like, you know, ESG. And, like, to me it was dance music live, you know, live dance music.
Sure.
And I was into it. I'm like, there was a moment in time that I was really wanting to have more organic in-house. Because at that time, there was house music was really stale. That's what happened when the genre you're in doesn't inspire anymore. You start looking at other things to infuse to make it a little better.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people just don't. They're purists. They want, even if it's bad, it's good. Like, just stay in your lane.
Yeah.
And I remember playing it was either like a DFA record or House of Jealous Lovers or something mm-hmm. of that sort, which is the Rapture.
Mm-hmm.
And I was kindly asked, the first time it ever happened, to not play this, or just to kind of, you want to end early?
By the manager.
By the club, somebody the club. In the club. I can't remember who it was.
Yeah.
And I'm looking, I'm thinking, you know, in hindsight, when I think about it now, I get it. It's a house club, but they're not understanding that this is dance music.
Right.
You know, but I wasn't staying at that time in their lane.
Sure.
And it was scaring them.
Yeah.
That stuff like that happens, man.
You know? Yeah.
It's interesting shit.
Back to, you know, you're talking about starting out and just the drive, the hustle, t-shirts, being at the studio, being in the clubs, you know, doing kind of whatever it takes. Where do you see that with youngsters coming up today? Do you see examples of that type of hustle?
Yes and no. I think it's a lot less, to be honest, and I'm not criticizing because my time was different.
Sure.
We just had less, we had to be there. So, like, for example, if you wanted to make music, you really wanted to make music. So you either had to invest in studio time, which was expensive, or you had to invest in hardware, which was expensive. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like you can just do it.
Yeah.
So it's a different now, but I think kids also, their hustle, they're holding the future in their hands.
Mm-hmm.
The career's in their hands, which is their phones.
Yeah.
And they rely on that more than anything else, even more than talent, to figure out how they're going to achieve that hustle or that goal. So they're not putting in time into the craft or the history or anything. They're just literally holding their career in their hands and going, okay, how do I amplify my optics? How do I figure out this algorithm? How do I do this? How do I get more likes? How do I get more this? How do I get more that? How do I look like I'm looking like I'm successful before I'm successful?
Yeah.
It's all like this false narrative.
100%.
And that's weird to me.
Well, essentially, but they're rewarded for it, right?
Like, oh, totally.
And you know, definitely if you look at hip hop right now, like, you have to be in memes. I don't know if you have to be, but that's a lot of
cats
are coming up, right? By just having something that hits a meme that, you know, and that's just part of your...
It goes viral.
And it's like hand-in-hand with the music, right? And, I think, is there, you know, as much as these guys can learn from you, what are you learning from them?
there's a lot I learned from younger artists. I think there's, and you can tell, I hear some young artists when they're making records and they're not really, they don't know what they're doing. Mm-hmm. I hear that innocence again. And I like that.
Yeah.
Like that. Okay, you really don't know what you're doing, but you figured something out.
Yeah.
And you hear that rawness of a record that I may forgot the rawness. I'm like, because I know how to do different, I produce in different ways. So
sure.
I'm like, damn, I should simplify again. I should just, you know, maybe not compress so much, or maybe do this, or maybe compress more.
Mm-hmm.
Like, or just destroy that kiss or that yeah. kick, and or, you know, beef up my harmonica. So, like, you start thinking, like, damn, man, or less is more.
Right.
Why am I using so much? So, you know, I get inspired a lot by young kids because, you know, and a lot of them is with, you know, with the Dawes, you know, they dive into shit that, you know, I necessarily would stay away from. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, and learn new tricks, you know. So I get inspired by the youth for sure. You know, I still think I'm fucking, I ain't that old. You know, so
for sure.
I mean, I'm older than them. Yeah, I'm not
16 or 20 coming
yeah.
up. Right.
Yeah, 16, man. When you're that young and you have that world in your hand, I look at them, I'm like, man, you guys can do anything.
Yeah.
Stop looking at your phone
yeah.
or thinking about that, and
yeah.
you know, go dive in into the music and just put your time in.
Yeah.
These kids look at a year now like 10 years, and
right.
it is true because technology has made it that way. Like
for
now,
sure.
1 week is 1 month,
right.
1 month is 3 months, 3 months is 6 months, and it's just changing.
Yeah.
Like people are planning ADE next year right
for
now.
Sure. Yeah.
Like we're in ADE, and they're like, "Yo, next year, da da da, it's like closes." But like, it's nuts.
Yeah.
I don't remember it ever being that way, where you're planning
mm-hmm.
already for another event, and you're mm-hmm. in that event. That's close, and they're selling tickets. So right
yeah.
now, you turn on your phone, like, "All right,
yeah.
tickets for next year of this party ADE on
sure.
sale now, pre-sale." You
yeah.
don't even know who you're going. It's brand based.
For sure.
It's not artist-driven anymore.
Yep.
Everything is brand-based.
Yep.
You're investing in brands, or you want to go just because of the brand. Now the
mm-hmm.
brands are more important than the artists,
mm-hmm.
which is that's a whole other thing. So the labels want to say they're behind the artists, but
sure.
at the end of the day, they want to amplify their brand. It's about their brand.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, which, I mean, you know, I kind of get both sides of it.
Yeah.
Right, like...
I get it, too.
For me... You know, there's just so much choice out there for in everything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You know, even this town, I used to come here 10 years ago, and there's like two good places to eat.
Yeah.
And the rest was trash. Now there's like good food. Every
yeah.
city you go to, there's good food, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's changed.
Every time you grab your phone, there's more music than you could ever listen to in your life. And so the task of finding something is just more complicated than it used to be. Anything, right? And so brands help us do that, right? If
yeah.
I look to, you know, Armada, I kind of know what I'm getting.
Yeah,
give or take.
I totally hear what you're saying, and I get it. Totally, because we grew up with brands and clothing, like, you know,
for sure.
This, that, you know, Polo,
mm-hmm.
or Echo,
yeah.
whatever, you know, Ding Dong School, you go to, you know. Rave clothing.
That's right.
But you knew what you were getting, right?
Yeah.
But then there were other brands that weren't based on the culture that became like the Polo. They weren't for hip hop, but they became
for sure.
that.
Right.
Because it was the culture forced it that way.
Yeah.
When you look at labels like a Sony or XL or Parlophone or any of those labels, so when you think of XL, they're not going, this is XL Festival.
No.
But no, but XL has an Adele, they have the Prodigy,
right.
they have Bradley
yeah,
Joe Boy, they
sure.
have all this, they curate artists, but it's not about them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not mm-hmm. selling their brand. They're selling their artists, they're marketing the artists. So I get it, it's in a different spectrum, different
sure.
deal, but an XL start like 12-inch
right.
label doing drum and bass and, you know, really happy hardcore break beats and evolved
yeah.
to what it became. So I think they evolved to where they became because they weren't just invested in themselves. They were also invested in the artist.
Right.
That's why they evolved to become who they are.
I
know?
Also think it's a different, like, on the one side, it's about minimizing risk, right? Meaning, like, kind of what you were saying before, like, if everything kind of sounds the same, well, then if you like one, you're probably going to like the rest of it.
Yeah.
But now, is any of it going to really move you and challenge you and take you out of your comfort zone? Probably not.
Probably not, yeah.
Because that's not what they're, you know.
You're right, but
so they're playing it safe, kind of what you were talking about.
Yeah, but what happens is, yeah. But what happens is the labels, I think, wind up feeling that they're more important than the artist.
Sure.
And that's the problem. So here we are, they, you know, they'll go, they have this brand and event, and they have this lineup, but at the end of the day, they're looking at themselves going, it's about, did they want to say it's about the artists that are playing? But really, it could be anybody there.
I mean, I think there's a saying, I might be making this up, that like success has a thousand fathers, right? So like everybody sees that it's them, the artist, the manager, the label, right? Like everyone thinks it's them that made it happen, whatever. And you know, there's some truth to all of that, but we're in an industry that likes to overplay that.
It's true. Okay, I guess that's my own personal viewpoint.
So, but you have a label, and you've had labels throughout your career. So, how do you approach? What's your approach?
Artists. Yeah. I don't A&R it. Like, it's funny, people ask me for records, and it's so interesting. And I had this conversation with a couple of friends of mine, and they're like, and it's from like the label owned A&R guy, like, you know, yo, we love what you do, give us a record, and you give them a record. Yeah, but we want it to sound more like this. You're like, okay, but I just gave you what you came to me for a record.
For sure.
Like, so what I'm trying to say is, like, if I'm painting a picture and I'm an artist and I have a white canvas and I'm stroking some strokes, how are you going to take the brush out of my hand and then start painting it, but you want a painting from me? I don't understand it. So what I do to younger artists, if they send me demos, either I like it or I don't like it. If I kind of like it and I'm like, I think it's too long, or it's a simple suggestion, maybe just, you know, edit this, like, but I don't do any creative input because I want them to be who they are. I can't tell them how to make their music.
Right.
Yeah. You know, then I'm doing it.
Yeah. Sure.
And a lot of A&Rs do that. Like, tell them, oh, you should do this. I'm like, you can make it. Like, you know, so that's one way around my label where I don't tell who I'm releasing music how to make their music.
Right.
That's why I'm signing it, because they made it. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's a great, I mean, I love that approach. I think that that works really well for some artists, and some artists need the help, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, I met, so in the 90s, I was a manager, and I used to meet, you know, I was in L.A. in hip-hop, and I used to meet, I met 10 guys who told me they did all these, you know, these records for Dr. Dre.
Yeah.
They're like, you know, Dre's name is on it, but it's me.
Yeah.
10 different guys, and they were all telling the truth, right, as far as I know. But you'd hear their demos, and they weren't good. They didn't sound like Dre's shit.
Like, finished, yeah.
And so, you know, you learned what Dre did. He may not have written those first notes, but he took somebody's stuff that was pretty good and made it what we heard on the records.
But that's different, because that's production on a level of, like, it's like Quincy Jones, Rod Temperton.
For sure.
You know, on that level caliber.
Yeah.
I'm not going to, if I'm just signing these records, I'm not going to co-produce it and this and that and go and put my, like, that's more in depth.
For sure.
Where you should, these kids, you should give them some pointers.
Right.
You know, but Dre's at a point and a level where he needs a factory of producing, and he perfects it later, and then they get publishing. I think that and that mental, totally.
Yeah, and all these A&R guys you're talking about, they're not Dr. Dre either.
No,
so
yeah, we're living in a world like you should be able to make these tracks and just, you know, do it and not.
Yeah.
It's not. I'm not saying saying it's easy. It's not. You know.
No, I get it.
But yeah, these, you know, they don't. They wind up. I've had A&Rs literally saying, "You should change this for put this. I don't like the smell. Change that. Move this. Drop. Move." And like, man, you're making them. Like, you're doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Then do it yourself. Right. You should make records, actually, because then I should. You know.
Sure.
And that's what I think is funny. I think A&Ring is it's always good to help the artist, but I think it's good to help them shine better instead of trying to force you on them.
Mm-hmm.
So if I was working and producing a band, I'm not going to change the band. I'm just going to enhance them and make them make what they already do good better. Mm-hmm. But I'm not going to change their aesthetic or what, you know, how, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, really add too much of me to them, because then it becomes me. Mm-hmm. It's not really what they're about.
If you're enjoying this one, let's go back in the Rebel Radio archives. Check out my interview last year with Louis Vega, another one of the godfathers of house music. Louis has so many great stories to tell. And you know, another guy who just, I appreciate his whole way of going at it. So I hope you dig that one too.
So besides the music, what do you look for in an artist to know you want to work with them?
On a long term, is definitely the X factor. Meaning, like, yo, you're a beast. Like, if there's a kid, if there's a kid that you know is like, she's big.
Bananas.
Yeah. A kid that's really like, yo, if you see that potential that you want to nurture and you help, I'm totally, you know, bring him under my wing and help him.
Nice.
Yeah, because I like doing that and I love doing that, you know? But there's far and few between that you find some kids that's really like, you know.
Of course, I mean, you got to be protective of your time and resources.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Especially in this day and age.
For sure.
But usually I just, if I like it and I'll play it, I'll put it out.
Yeah.
And I make it as easy as possible for the artist, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, we'll put it out, you know, there's some options for release dates, whatever. I'm working on a new project right now with a friend of mine, with Demure. Something collectively, hopefully two other people. I think it's one of the first times that a group of real individual DJs and producers get together and do something.
Nice. And you're not gonna tell me what it is.
Walk the walk and talk the talk, meaning like truly support the artists that we bring in.
Oh, cool.
Put them on the events for real. Not like, oh, we will.
Right.
And then, you know.
Got you on at 8 o'clock or something.
Yeah, or not get them on at all.
Like, oh, wow.
Like, do a party in their city and not invite the younger kids that are from there to play.
Yeah.
You know, so we're doing something. I think the kids don't realize one of the really disconnects right now, back in. Disconnects between the street kids now that they don't know is that this music is theirs.
Sure.
Like house music, techno is theirs. It's black, Puerto Rican, it's from the streets, it's created, techno is from Detroit. And they don't know this. So there's that disconnect. No. But if they realize this, they claim ownership. That's why Kanye looks like a genius when he samples a house record. They're like, oh, this motherfucker's a genius, because they don't know where it comes from.
Of course. No, I mean, I had Kenny Larkin on the show not that long ago.
Yeah.
You know,
love Kenny.
Me too. But, you know, he talks about, like, he considers himself and his guys he came up with, they're like the Little Richards, right?
Yeah.
That started the sound and then immediately, in their case, immediately got co-opted by you know, white producers,
beans.
White promoters, mm-hmm. all of that, right? And, you know, brought it back to the world as this white thing.
Which is, it's if you look at the pattern of musical history,
right?
Kind of what happens in everything.
Yeah, house music, same thing.
Yeah, rock music, same thing.
Right.
It is what it is.
For sure.
So we acknowledge that. Now, I'm not trying to fight it. Mm-hmm. It is what it is. All we got to do is now re-expose. We got to use what we have in our resources now, is technology and information, and just feed it back to these kids so they learn.
Yeah.
I was getting my hair cut the other day, and not my normal barber. It's the other dude. So it was really, it's funny because real quick, I was taking my girl to get her haircut into a place where she wasn't normally go to. So I was like, she was all like tensed up. I'm like, just don't worry about it. Just let me cut your hair.
It's not that simple for girls, right?
Yeah, so she went in and I'm like, I had time. Like, let me go find, you know, because I was going on a trip, let me go find somebody real quick to do me up. I found a spot, and I go in, and I started feeling like her. I go, fuck. And then, anyway, it was uncomfortable. Right. Lo and behold, they're playing music, and then Robin S. comes on, Show Me Love. And there's brothers, like two black kids, mm-hmm. young kids, maybe in their 20s, mm-hmm. come in here, and he's like, yo, this is the jam. I'm like, I'm just listening. Crystal Water comes on, I guess whatever playlist that was, it was his. Mm-hmm. And it, before that, it was like Chance the Rapper, this and that, Run the Jewels, you know. It was eclectic.
Yeah.
Y'all like this? He's like, yo, this is the shit, man. I was listening to her. Then he's like, I was listening to more of Robin S, and she had dope records. And blah, blah, blah. I'm like, wow. They had no idea. They're like, yeah, man, this is Europe stuff. This is us. This is, you know, techno is black. It comes from Detroit. And
for sure.
Like, nah, for real?
Yeah.
And I'm just not trying to educate and not trying to be preachy and just talk and have barbershop talk in way where they're like, yo, and they're looking at me like, who are you and why do you know this shit? And then I didn't tell them any information. But it was good to see that happening because that opens up the conversation.
Yeah.
And I think like a panel next year in AD should be a panel like that where you open up the conversation between. You know, and it's hard maybe to do that here. Maybe it should be done in the States.
Sure.
Because how is this going to resonate from you there? Yeah, you know, so something.
Right.
Yeah, Ultra, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and an artist. Anything artists need to, you know, acknowledge that.
But I think hip-hop needs to come back here, too. You say hip-hop needs to come back?
For sure.
Yeah, why not?
Yo, think about it. When I was growing up, and I had this conversation with somebody from 300, from the New York company,
mm-hmm.
a friend of mine that he's seen a lot. He was at Def Jam. So, and we mm-hmm. had this conversation, and I pinpointed something. He was like, you're right. When I was growing up, every hip-hop artist at the time had a club joint on the
record. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know, you had... Queen Latifah coming mm-hmm. to my house. How Do I Love Thee? Craig G turned his house into mm-hmm. a room. Special Ed, this is for the club scene.
Mm-hmm.
Tribe Called Quest, Black is Black. Even the DOC had a club joint.
Oh, damn.
Yeah.
I'm gonna look for that one.
Dude. House music always soothes, so get with the flow, let's go. Yo, can you rock to a house group tempo? If so, then shall we let the games begin? What better opposition can you be in? I'm on fire, the flames too hot to douse. The pool is open, come into my house. Everybody had a, you know, stomp, you know, KYs, and then you had the more than just did house, but you had hip hop, MC Light, House Power.
Yep.
I mean, we can go on and on and on.
Well, yeah, because at the time it was club music.
Club music. What happened was the connection to the gay culture that they turned their back on.
For sure.
100%. And I asked them, like, you think that's what it was? You being a label guy at that time, in the trenches of that time. He was like, absolutely, they were scared.
Right.
So they had to detach themselves from that aesthetic or that thing because they were making hip hop. You can't have just the connection to house music being gay. It was like,
sure. I mean, it was the same thing with rock and disco, right?
Yeah.
Or soul and disco. You know, shit that went down in Detroit and all that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's funny stuff. But it was working and it was happening. It was a movement. It was,
yeah.
It was definitely something amazing.
Yeah.
You know, look at Jungle Brothers mm-hmm. and Ty. You know,
for sure.
The fuck, that's crazy. Mm-hmm. We can have 20 million of those. We got more Robin S's. We have more Crystal Waters. You know. So,
bring it back.
Well, I mean, hopefully we'll try.
We're ready.
All we can do is try to do it, you know.
Hey, you mentioned your girl, so I read that y'all are getting married.
Yeah, next year, actually.
So, important question: who's DJing the wedding?
Yeah. Wow. Whoever comes, that's there. That wants to grace the decks. Will.
Okay.
I know, like, you know, everybody's down to do it, so, you know, I'm sure it's going to be, I'm going to have.
I mean, for a guy like you, that's not not a simple choice.
No, but I mean, like, there's
good. Open it up to friends.
Open it up to friends and people bring USBs and have fun.
That's cool.
And let's have a good time, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. If we get there, you know, I kind of want it to be organic. I was married once before I'm divorced.
Okay.
And I want this one to be a little bit more meaningful than, and I'm not to say my last one wasn't meaningful. It just was a different, a different place in my life.
For sure.
And it was more of a party.
Yeah.
Then it was like, you know, should I remember the wedding? And I'm like, sure.
That's right.
Yeah. So.
That's cool.
So she's in Portugal right now, actually. She was here. She left yesterday. She'll be back tomorrow morning.
Oh, nice.
To go see her grandmother.
Yeah.
And also look at places.
Oh, cool.
We're
going to
get married in Portugal.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Amazing. What are you most excited about next?
I'm excited for the next 5 years of this phase of my career.
Okay.
Of this time. I'm excited about what's about to happen, what's about to come. I'm going to work on another album.
Okay.
Which the last one I did was on Armada, actually, called Under the Influence. And most people don't know when I did that record. Our fault, all of our faults, that we get influenced by things that are outside of our realm. Like, I'm influenced by Trevor Horn and Prince. I'm lucky enough that I met someone like Trevor Horn and stuff, but you start saying all this stuff though that is kind of out of your reach,
mm-hmm.
or out of your realm, really.
Right.
That are your inspiration, and I realized before I started my last album that all my influences have been around me the whole time. They come over my house, they hang out with me, we break bread, we talk about music, and it's my friends, Ty, Kenny, and you take it for granted, you know, that these people are, you know, your friends now.
Right, right.
And when I was growing up, they weren't my friends. They were like my people I admired.
Right.
They were my Trevor Horns.
Yeah.
They were, you know, my Rod Temperton's,
mm-hmm.
you know, for real. And
right.
then you become friends with them, and somehow it gets lost along the way. And then, you know, you revert back to like, oh man, Quincy Jones and this and that, and then you're like, yeah, they're amazing, but you're amazing, Todd.
Yeah.
Fuck. And then we would go. I realized we would hang out in my house and we start listening to his old freestyle records that he produced. They did a shitload that I loved, and he starts dancing, we get inspired. I'm like, damn, this is my influence. And so I did a whole record based around all of them.
Oh, that's cool.
Basically paying homage to my friends.
Yeah.
That was what Under the Influence was.
Dope.
You know?
Nice.
Yeah.
That's exciting. Well, I have a quick lightning round before I let you go.
Right.
What's your favorite city to travel to?
Spain.
Who's your favorite DJ?
Derek Carr.
What's the last great book you read?
Motley Crue, The Dirt.
Oh, shit. Okay. What movie have you seen the most in your life?
Purple Rain.
That's a great movie, man. I watched it again earlier this year.
Yeah.
Do you ever wake up with a song playing in your head?
Yes.
What's the last one you can remember?
It was, it was just recently, I can't remember the title now, but it was some pop record that was just like on.
Yeah.
Usually that happens with the most annoying song.
Yeah, yeah, it's not like it.
Yeah,
not
it's like
a song that
you know,
like.
It's like, you know, Demi Lovato. It's like something, yeah.
What's the last thing you stole?
Oh, damn, for real? I didn't steal it, but kind of stealing. So I was at Home Depot. They gave me this. I was changing my hardware for my cabinets.
Uh-huh.
And so the guy gave me, he just broke open a patch and he just gave me one of the, you know, I needed one. He just gave it to me. But that's
cool.
Technically stealing.
Yeah. It's all right. That's friendly, though.
Sometimes, you know.
Gotta be that way.
You gotta do your fucking
right.
Thank you.
If I worked for you, what's something I would hear you say over and over?
Good morning. Would you have coffee? How's your day? Just keep it moving.
Nice.
Just, you know, shit like that.
That's cool. Junior, thanks, man. I appreciate you doing this.
Thank you. This is dope.
It's great. Anytime you come to LA, if there's anything you need,
yeah,
we got
you. Let's break some bread.
Yeah, like
100%.
For sure. Dope.
Yeah, that was Junior Sanchez live from ADE on Rebel Radio. I hope you enjoyed it. I know I did. Make sure you leave us a comment. A 5-star review on iTunes wouldn't hurt. We appreciate that. Go ahead and subscribe. Make sure you're getting all of our episodes if you're not already subscribed. But if you're not, I'm not really sure how you got this one. Anyway, you can also reach out to us on Twitter, on Facebook. We love to hear from you. All of those are at Rebel Radio Net. And we got videos of a lot of our episodes showing up on YouTube at Rebel Radio Net. Most importantly, come back next week for more Rebel Radio. Peace.